We want to thank y'all for tuning in to Run Up the Numbers.
Every Monday at 8 a.m., and if you missed us in the morning, you can catch the replay in the afternoon at 2 p.m. and again at 8. You can also check out the shows archived over at thenumbers.fm. And for you early risers, every Monday morning at 6 a.m. on 107.1 X-Ray FM.
Make sure you're following us on all social media because we out here.
Yes.
Twitter, Facebook, Instagram,
yes.
House Party,
yes.
YouTube,
there.
Twitch, Black Planet. I know y'all talking about our OnlyFans. It's going crazy in there. MySpace, Tinder, catch us ticking on the talk and Google Plus.
Hey, it's Cam Jones running up the numbers here with you. I want to chime in right quick and let y'all know this week you in for a special treat. It's part of our CEP Numbers collaboration. I sit down with Deron Coles, Executive Director of the Blueprint Foundation, and we talk about clean energy. We talk about the youth workforce training and development and why it's so important to the green sector. And also the connection between job creation potential and green energy initiatives. And with that said, sit back, get aboard. Let's run up the numbers cleanly. Hey, welcome to another episode of Run Up the Numbers, our special CEP edition. We've got Deron Coles in the house with us today, Executive Director of the Blueprint Foundation. How are you doing today?
I'm pretty good, thank you.
Righteous, righteous. So we can just jump ourselves right on into this thing. Could you give us a bit of background on yourself and how that path led you into the work of clean energy sector?
Sure. I grew up in Baltimore, Maryland, and I did most of my schooling there. I came out to Oregon for graduate school. I started out in mechanical engineering at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County.
Okay.
And when it came time to do undergraduate research, I couldn't really find a mechanical engineering project that I really found interesting. So I ended up doing a study on non-point source pollution in the Chesapeake Bay. And that sort of started me on a journey of discovery of freshwater systems and wanting to study those more. And so I came out to Oregon to get a master's and PhD in civil engineering with the water resources focus. So that's how I sort of got into the environmental realm writ large. But, as the green sector is starting to blow up, thankfully, I'm getting more and more embedded in it.
Yes. So I'm always curious with hearing, the path that people find themselves on. Was this something as a kid? Like, what got you into this as a youth? Or was it a spur of the moment? Like, I needed to make a quick decision? Give me more on that.
You know, I think that I just am an outdoorsy person.
Okay.
I just recognize the sort of the mental health benefits of being outdoors. So growing up in Baltimore, we had a creek that ran through our neighborhood, and I would just go down to the creek and watch the crayfish and just do little science projects and read and that sort of thing. And so I just had a love for being out there and just the serenity of it.
Okay.
It's a big juxtaposition between that and other life sort of circumstances in Baltimore. And
okay.
So at a very young age, realized that I feel healthier, feel happier when I'm out in nature and gardening and that sort of thing.
Yes, I love that. I think about that in terms of, for the people specifically in the Northwest, like this is a huge, when it comes to the outdoor experience, I feel like it's not really anywhere else I can think of in the U.S. that's hitting like this. And how much it's taken for granted. I'm not a native, right? So coming here, it's like, oh, this is crazy. You can go on a hike right here. You can drive to the mountain right now. I have family come up and visit, and they're blown away at the green, like the trees.
Yeah.
How many trees? How much is going on here? And so I think there's the element of we're being young and thinking of people who grew up in the Northwest that I know. It's like hiking or going to whatever mountains are closest to wherever, that seemed to be a thing in their childhood, but it doesn't get taken into adulthood a lot of the times with the people that I rock with.
Interesting. Yeah. And Yeah, and with Blueprint Foundation, you know, we take kids out to witness nature, and you know, when we go on these trips, there's usually one of our students that, you know, like we're going to the coast, for example, say, you know, I've never been to the coast before, and these are students that grew up in Portland.
Yeah.
So sometimes you can grow up in this area and not feel that connection or get the opportunity to have that connection to nature. And that's part of what Blueprint is about, making those sort of reconnecting the Black community to nature.
See, that's perfect. That's perfect setup for telling us more of the history and the current work of the Blueprint Foundation.
Yeah. So the history is, you know, the Brothers of Phi Beta Sigma, it's a historically Black fraternity, have been doing mentoring of mainly Black males at Roosevelt High School for years. And then they ended up getting an Oregon Department of Education grant to continue that work, which prompted them to want to start Blueprint Foundation and just make a bigger impact. I had just left Oregon State University where I was teaching math, and I started my for-profit. And so they hired me on to start, to help them start the organization. Okay. And so that was kind of how we started, a mentoring program that, you know, blossomed into multi-generational mentoring with near-peer mentors and older professional mentors as well. And then we're sort of transitioning into workforce development. Yes. So it's sort of an extension of the mentoring, so project-based learning with mentoring attached to help students, you know, explore careers in the green sector and do actual entry-level work as well.
Yes. So you said, you know, part of it started with Roosevelt, and once this kind of got, or after Roosevelt High School, once this got going, did it expand to where, did it stay in the school? Like, how did it build and how did word get out, you know, to the other youth to that wanted to be a part of this?
Yeah, you know, our program director at the time, his name's Jason Stroman. He was program coordinator way back in the day, seven years ago. And he was also a step-up coordinator at Roosevelt. And so he had sort of that connection to Portland Public Schools and the students there. And so that's sort of how the ball started rolling. But then he branched out to other schools in the area. And, you know, once students experience something that they like, they tell their friends, they tell their family about it. And so now we have lots of family members, you know, as our participants, which I like a lot. And so it makes it easier, I suppose, for recruitment when you have that word of mouth.
Okay. And how long is the program?
Well, that's the thing. Originally, we started, it was cohorts, and they were supposed to be with us just for a year. But when you are supporting Black youth, especially in sciences and engineering, math, you really want to have a connection and be consistent with them over the years, right? And so not a one-off year and then suddenly they're ready to take on everything that they're going, you know, they're going to face in STEM. So instead we say, you know, this is the cohort you came in on, but you're welcome to stay with us for as long as you feel you need us, you know?
Okay.
And so we've got students that started in middle school with us that are now in college and they're near peer mentors for our current students. So, that's sort of how it evolved.
Yeah. Nice. So what are the age ranges then that you guys typically deal?
Originally it was Black males in high school.
Okay.
With the whole family connection, they're getting younger and younger.
Okay.
Because, you know, my younger siblings now, my little sister or my little brother wants to come. And we don't turn anyone away, you know, because it is about really spreading awareness and making sure everyone has opportunity. So now we've got people with our early learner program that are in preschool. And so we work with Black parents and we co-develop nature-based activities with them to help them facilitate the learning of their preschool students. But the preschool students learn engineering design skills before kindergarten. So our earliest participants are not even in formal education yet.
Yeah.
Up to adults in like the Green Workforce Academy that we implement with partners like EcoTrust, with some of the elders, NAIA Family Center, and Rebuilding Center was in the mix too for a while there. But those folks are, you know, usually early to mid 20s. Okay. And that's a 5-week program where at the end, we try and get them into entry-level work in the green sector.
That is huge. That is huge.
Yeah, so it's sort of cradle to career is how we look at it.
Cradle to career. I like that phrase. That I like that. Why do you believe that intentionally focusing on Black youth workforce training and development in the green sector is so important?
Well, I think that if we need to, now this is Duran speaking, not the Foundation.
Okay.
But I really think that we need to think about workforce development differently. If we're sending people to formal education, then they should have a focus. And we should make sure that we're paying attention to their assets and their interests so that very early on, I've already mentioned early learners, right? So very early on, folks begin school with the idea that this is information I'm learning to get this career that I want in the future, right? And that career option might change, but that focusing in, you know, these classes are for a purpose. They're not just because people are telling me to do it.
Yeah.
I think that that is a way to really recruit folks, especially to the sciences, because there's so many barriers for you know, Black youth, the tracking that happens in schools, you know, the various things that they could get into if they don't have folks like Blueprint Foundation, you know, at their back. And so I think just focusing on workforce development and attaching it to academics is the best way to have students feel that their schooling makes, you know, matters.
Yes. Okay. One of the things I want to ask, because we talk with the workforce and the two programs in which I saw with the Grounding Waters and the Constructing Careers. Can you give me a little bit about those two?
Yeah, I can. Both of those are our high school programs.
Okay.
And those are, so they're workforce development for environmental science and for green infrastructure is the Constructing Careers. And they both operate under the WISE model. And so WISE is the W is we take students out and they witness nature. So like I said, okay. We take them to the coast, the Silver Falls, the places that they may not have gone before, even though they grew up here.
Yeah.
So that they can start making those neural connections to nature and do it not alone when, you know, as a Black person being alone in the wilderness might be a little scary, but if you're there with a group of Black people, then you get to have this great experience with your people out in nature. And so those associations start forming. And then we investigate issues. So they do things like environmental monitoring, we look at issues around water quality, stormwater management, Superfund sites, that sort of thing. And then they get to solve or contribute to a solution. And so they do things like build bioswales, we plant trees, we restore wildlife areas. Like we have a project out at Leech Botanical Garden right now. It's called the Back Five Project. And it's with Leech Botanical Garden, Johnson Creek Watershed Council, Wisdom of the Elders, and ICO, the African Immigrant Org.
Okay.
And that project is restoring 5 acres to change it into sort of an outdoor classroom and community space that's multicultural, where people can go out, be in nature, and learn science in a space that's inclusive. So the students get involved in that. And then the E in WISE is they then educate the community about what they did. And so they talk about the science, they talk about what it means to them, and they talk about the projects that they do. And since many of the projects, like the tree planting, are in their neighborhood, they get the opportunity to walk by these things with their friends and their family and say, hey, I planted that, or, you know, that bioswale, I put that bioswale in, or I cleaned that, I remediated that bioswale, and they can talk about the form and function of bioswale. And so it's just, again, workforce development. They're learning the discourse, right? They're learning how to talk about these things. They're learning how to advocate for their community, and they're learning how to educate their community about this stuff. Right? Yes. And if we're talking about renewable energy, that is extremely important, right? To hear the messenger matters, to hear people that look like you excited about clean energy and giving you, you know, tips on how to get involved and why it benefits you. Mm-hmm. Hearing that from, you know, a high school student that, you know, is this Black environmental educator really, one, makes a difference because it's meaningful, mm-hmm. right, to hear that. And if the fact that it might be surprising makes it even more memorable to people, right? And so I just think that it's really important for our youth to be able to talk about these things with their family members. I think it's just right. extremely impactful. Yeah.
So when you were coming up, and was there talk in the spaces that you were in, family, friends, and so on, about clean energy, about anything related to this? Were these conversations that were happening? How familiar were you with it coming up?
Coming up, I would say I was aware of it because of my interest, not because of the interest of the folks around me.
Right.
And so I just, and at the time I felt like it made me like the odd person out because, you know, if folks around you aren't interested in that stuff, then you feel like, well, you know, why am I different sort of thing?
Yeah.
But back in the day, we did have our version of Google searches, right, called the encyclopedia. And so that's sort of how I that's how I started out learning about this stuff. And, you know, so it's just me and the book.
Okay. Yeah, I think about that in terms of conversation that I have now. I think about conversations that I had as a kid. And I mean, outside of not wanting to have a high light bill, you know, or keep the door closed, you're letting this heat out. It was more about the cost, more than, you know, fixing some of the problems that were there that were making these bills be so crazy to begin with. And then, you know, we talk about the environment and being outdoors. And as you kind of mentioned, and thinking about as a culture, a lot of times it's like, I'm not going to the woods. I'm not, you know, like those elements and how that's just rooted. Like, we don't do that. And as people speak as for the group in that, and how, you know, kids, I'm sure, are internalizing that a lot of times and without even giving it a chance. And so what you all are doing by exposing them the right way and actually having some contributions to nature and what's going on out there, along with the explanation and the education of it. This is something crazy cool in a way. I'm getting mind blown as I'm going through. I know I did my quick check and research on stuff, but actually, you know, kind of hearing it and knowing that this type of thing exists is wild. And then it makes me always wonder what has been out there previous. Like, were there things like this when I was a teenager? I guess I'll always ponder on, you know, that type of stuff, but I'm glad it's happening now. So in general, do you think that people are seeing a connection between job creation potential and green energy initiatives? I'm tripping over my tongue.
Well, I think that folks are starting to see that just because the number of jobs out there that are related to the green sector are growing, and then there are things like PSEF, you know, that's really raising awareness because the actual dollar is going to Black, you know, community members for workforce development, for doing these projects, for putting solar, you know, on their houses, or like what Community Energy Project does, you know, with the community solar, helping people learn about that and get connected to that as well. So I think people are more and more realizing, if I want a job and I want the job to be sort of a secure, family sustaining sort of job, you know, the green sector is a good place to get that. And it's a good place to get that without having to go. And I know I gave my background and I said, you know, got a master's and PhD and all that, but you don't have to have all that stuff in order to be a green sector professional, which is awesome for the Black community. Because we have so many barriers to entry for higher education, right? And so if we can learn before we graduate from high school, and then figure out a pathway that's different, that's an alternative to higher ed, that will get us into these jobs faster. And if we can do that through support from folks like the Blueprint Foundation, that makes sure that there are sort of growth opportunities in these companies that they're going to apply for.
Okay.
That's, you know, an ideal situation to me. No college debt, didn't have to deal with all the barriers that I know from experience that happen in college. And, you know, you end up with a career that is making a difference for your community, making a difference for your, you know, your family and your pocket. So that's the win-win.
Yes. In your time in this sector, have you seen a growth in the numbers of people of color being represented and jumping into it?
Yeah, that is, I think that we still have a ways to go on that.
Okay.
especially if you're looking at who's owning these businesses.
Oof, yeah.
And so Blueprint Foundation, we apply for PSEP grants as well. And what we want to do with that money is really economic development. So it's this authentic diversification of the sector. Okay. So not just training people to be an entry-level worker their whole career.
Okay.
Right. Instead, train people so that they have knowledge of all the business aspects as well. Right. So then they can start their own solar installation business. We want Black people owning, their work and being the job creators as well. And so that is authentic sort of diversification. It's not, oh, I added one Black person to my company. It's, I brought someone in, I showed them the ropes, they stayed with me a period of time, and then they started their own company so that they could, you know, be this sort of full-fledged member in intersectional environmentalism and the green sector.
Yes. There's a, there's an element to, you know, the path that the way that education has been stuffed for like higher education versus trades. And also this idea that it's, oh, just construction, just out somewhere with a hammer building a house or a building. And the push that I've seen here in the past couple of years, kind of pushing people more towards the trades and understanding that this is like a springboard. There's so many paths. Once you actually get your foot, you know, onto the pad, you can go so many ways. And I think that speaking with these youth and dealing with these youth and being able to kind of map that out, because just these general ideas of, okay, I'm a tradesman, but what does that actually mean? You know, if you're a carpenter, what does that mean? That can go so many ways. An insulator, there's so many ways, and you don't always have to necessarily be in the field. There's also another portion of this that you understanding the foundational can then take you into the corporate side and be able to apply, you know, your learning mode there. I'm definitely enjoying seeing that awareness, but I do think that, you know, like what we're doing here as far as trying to bring even more awareness and getting people to understand that the degree does, there's a lot of people out here that never got a degree and are making great money to support them and their families. And then in addition, like you pointed out, helping the community in which you're in, making it more sustainable. Yeah. Well, where do you think that the funding is most needed in youth workforce training and development?
I think that there needs to be funding for actual jobs for youth. So sort of training on the job. I also think that there needs to be seed money for youth that are ready to join internships, residency programs. You know, if there's companies that want to bring on an intern but can't afford to do it, it would be great if there was money available for those sorts of internships. And that's part of what PSEP is doing for Blueprint Foundation, is making sure that those dollars are there so that youth can see that this is a job that they can have in the future and that they can start training for now and still make money and contribute to their family, right? Because a lot of our students they have to have jobs to support their families.
Yeah.
But if we can give them jobs that are, you know, higher wages than they would get say at a fast food joint, and they're training for their future career, and they're doing different sort of different tasks in the green sector. So they're deciding where I want to be long term.
Yeah.
I think that that is the best recruitment tool, right? Learning, learning on the job.
Yeah. Yeah. When you definitely, when you have something in front of you, I think there's a, that marker of, you know, some people have to have a job, have to be getting paid, and they're, you know, it's vital. And the idea of volunteering time is not, like, that's not feasible. So having that in place to actually keep the focus, because we all know what, you know, trying to juggle between a job and, you know, whatever your passion is can be a hell of a thing. It's a hell of a thing for an adult with, you know, many years of skill sets. So for the youth trying to figure that out, this lets them keep that more singular focus. So yeah. How has the CEP impacted the work of the Blueprint Foundation?
Well, our interaction with CEP is in education, on the education side. So we were doing a class for Constructing Hope. They have this 5-week summer program, and Blueprint Foundation at the time was doing 1 week of renewable energy and energy efficiency, so like building science sort of coursework and field trips. And Community Energy Project, they have lots of education programs, but what they did with our youth was let us come out and job shadow them doing sort of an audit and weatherization. And so the students got to try their hand at, you know, insulating an attic. And so it's sort of those partners that have the technical piece, but they're also educators. So Blueprint Foundation then knows, okay, well, if we get them to come in and do the training, the students see the work being done properly by someone who's able to patiently explain to them, you know, that process that they're using and why they're doing what they're doing. And so that's just, again, the students learning on the job.
Okay. Yeah, really, the hands-on experience. Well, who are the different stakeholders you engage with to support the foundation and the program, I guess?
Yeah, we've got a lot of partners.
Okay.
We're a small org, and so we really count on partners to help us out with our programming and with our more, we're just going into some regional initiatives, some systemic change sort of initiatives, which require even larger coalitions. So I hesitate to try and list everybody because I'm going to leave some people off. But yeah, you know, other community-based orgs like Camp Elso, like Friends of Tryon Creek for our Tap and Roots program, BEAM, the Black Educational Achievement Movement. There's so many of them. And it's sort of industry folks. There's also governmental partners like Bureau of Environmental Services. There's so many. I don't want to try.
No worries. We don't want to leave anybody like, what about?
They're all important.
Yes. Something I want to circle back to also, in terms of the mentors that you all pull on, what is that process like? Is it, I know you talked about some of the kids being able to get to the point that they can help out, but is there a selection process? Is it the same small crew of people that you've had from the jump? Tell me some more about that.
The mentors shift. I think our first mentor should be somewhere in California doing graduate school by now. But Jason Stroman, our program director, and Vanessa Grant Coates, our program coordinator, do the recruitment for mentors. And we try and get folks that are at least interested in the green sector, if not in the green sector, in college or in a 2-year or in the trades. And so it's sort of, they're the near peer mentors for the high school students. So they can say, well, this is, you know, I'm 2 steps ahead of you, and this is how I got here, and you know, these are the things you should look out for, and did you think about, you know, this part of the sector? Is sort of how they impact the high school students.
Okay. And how, and about how many, like, do the, are the mentors assigned a certain amount of students? Like, how does that balance work?
Yeah, we try and have one mentor for four students.
Okay.
It's sort of our ratio. And so that way, if I'll give an example for our Changes in the Air program. It's through PSEP dollars, and it's in partnership with Jacobs Engineering. And once a week, students meet with their mentor, and they're learning how to do computer programming and how to build air quality sensors and do air quality studies to advocate for their community. And so having them learn what is very technical, but learning groups and with a mentor that's already gone through that curriculum we feel the best way for them to learn that stuff without being afraid and having the support they need along the way. So they're sort of in groups with one mentor helping them out.
Okay. One of the things I'm sure with working, doing this for the past 7 years here, and having these different sets of kids come through, is there a moment that stands out? Like if somebody had to, you know, hear your experience and like something that just, that you saw from one of the youths that, you know, just let you know, like, this is important.
Yeah. There's many of them. And I'm sort of an emotional person. whatever the students, you know, get up and they, how do I put this? Sometimes students are too cool for school, right?
Yeah.
And so you think that things aren't impacting them. And each year we have an end of year banquet. And this last year we did it out at Leash Botanical Gardens, and the students get up and they accept awards, and then they talk a little bit about the program. And I always fight tearing up during those times, because someone that you weren't sure if they were even enjoying themselves,
mm-hmm.
talk about their connection to nature,
yeah.
and talk about how they feel better when they're with us out in nature. And so you realize that they're making the same connection that I'm getting. Okay, so they're realizing the same thing that I realized when I was younger, but I had to do it alone.
Yeah.
My mom was a gardener, so I had that sort of small thing to hold on to.
Okay.
But these students don't have to do it alone. They're doing this with other Black environmentalists, other Black people that understand those connections. And so just knowing that they developed that and I had some hand in it, that they didn't have to do it by themselves, it's really meaningful.
Man, I, as a former educator, and knowing just what those words from those kids mean, I feel you in this moment, because I've had many a moments of having to, you know, Mr. Jones is pretty stoic, but right now, I got to take a walk. in these programs around the, or these spaces around the city where the kids are doing some of these projects, is there something left behind that the public would be able to walk by and know that this was something done through the org?
You know, there aren't many markers like that. But the students just put in these posts for interpretive signs out at Dharma Rain Zen Center. They have some hiking trails there. And so now there are four native plant signs that are going up. And it says, you know, Dharma Rain Zen Center, supported by a Quip grant, and Blueprint Foundation's logo is there too. So, but usually, actually, out at Leash, I suppose, yes, there's signage as well. If folks wanted to go out to Leash Botanical Gardens and see the work we're doing out there, but usually we don't put signage. Yeah.
It made me think about just because this is so dope to me, and kind of like sometimes they'll have like the, you know, like the map of the city and have little dots or something. Because I the way that I would go and just drive around just to see what these projects have been. So that's why that popped in my head. And I love the energy all the way through. So go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to mention that we're revamping our website, and it's so funny that you mentioned that, because one of the pages is going to be projects. And so we'd like to have an interactive map so that people can see where all the blueprint projects are, and different types, whether it's environmental justice or, you know, restoration, green infrastructure. You can click on that stuff and then see what we've been up to.
Yeah, that's something I would love to, possibly be able to, link that, put that link somewhere on our number site as we keep building that out with the resources and stuff around the community. So yeah, when that's up and going, I would definitely reach out and see about, getting the clearance and a thumbs up for it.
Sure thing.
So what are some of the conversations that members of the community can have to help bring awareness to the clean energy initiatives like CEP and how they impact programs like Blueprint Foundation?
I think that for Black people, what we really need to do is get back to the way we once were, right? Ancestrally, I mean. This, and having reciprocity with nature, having stories about nature that we tell each other, and just sharing our connections. And so I think if we're doing that, if we're sharing our story, this is my favorite place to go outdoors in Portland, and this is why, and it's connected to my great grandfather, and I didn't have much time with him, but this is something that we did together. Telling those family stories so that we can realize that we are a part of nature, and that understanding is part of being Black. It's part of our history, and things like slavery can't take that away from us. And so just getting back to who we truly are is the best way, I think, to get more of us in the green sector. And I think it's also important globally, right? Because we've got a huge global problem and we need everybody on board to fix it. And so if doing this gets Black people on board, I think that, it's just, we've got to do it.
Have you found it when trying to communicate again in our traditionally under-resourced areas, and sometimes the awareness of what's going on, or even the apprehension in kind of keeping up with the latest? Do you find pushback at all when you're talking about the benefits of transitioning into these things, these sustainable resources, and thinking, in the space of just clean energy as it works, as opposed, even the simple things like our old incandescent bulb versus the fluorescent. I feel like that's a lot of people's entry point to where they're thinking about any kind of upgrade. But have you got much pushback, or are people typically in line once you speak to them about the benefits?
I think people just aren't aware of what contributions they can make and how it benefits them. And so that's, again, why I really like the education component of what we do.
Okay.
Because hearing that from family members is really important. And I think it also goes back to what you were saying earlier around, turn that off because it's going to run up the light bill, sort of deal.
Right.
I think that is a great entryway into the green sector. So reminding people, that, oh, by the way, if we switch this out, this is the savings that we can get.
Yeah.
I think that is a way to bring people in.
Okay. Yeah. And that's it. And I asked that just, as we've had these interviews, it's trying to equip people too with how do you get these conversations going, for people who are not a part of these programs and so on, but do understand, they're paying attention, they're, doing their reading in I won't say research, but they're reading on, you know, the topic at hand. But we do know that, you know, oftentimes it's hard to get people that are set in their ways and don't, they're not able to see an immediate, or it may not even be that when we get into the idea, like when, you know, solar panels came out, I remember thinking in my head as a kid, like, oh, that's for the rich. That has nothing to do with this side of the city. Never saw any of that. And so there's this, that idea, it's like with that apprehension along with feeling like the costs and seeing like the upfront cost versus the savings that you're actually going to have. And in the long run, it's going to balance out and actually save you money. But again, having, trying to have those conversations can definitely be difficult, and trying to just equip people. We want to be able to equip people, you know, with some of the tools to get those conversations going. And I mean, you hit on it a little bit already with, you know, for the most part, what it boils down to, it's a saving. You are going to save with just some of these small adjustments. Is there anywhere that you would point someone that was looking to get more information to maybe bring to their family? Is there like a website, a resource or something that would help that?
For Black community members, yes. I would say check out Oz website, African American Alliance for Home Ownership. They also have a PSEF grant, and it's also around solar. They do lots of education around this. They partner with CEP and Earth Advantage and Energy Trust, you know, and Hacienda, CDC. So I think reaching out to them would be a great first step.
Okay. Liked that. I'm making a note of that. Before, you know, we're kind of winding it down. I've got a million questions, to be honest, of just like pick your brain stuff. But I do want to know, are there any words that you want to give to the listeners? Anything you want them to take away after listening to our chat here?
I think it's important for Black community to advocate for workforce development for their youth and to spread the word that workforce development is not just for adults that are out of high school, that you're trying to get into entry-level work. Workforce development starts early, like I said earlier, with early learners. So having students understand that their education matters because of the impact they can make for their community and the economic development that it can bring to them, I think is really important to start those messages early.
Yes, yes, yes. The good gems. Any shout outs you want to give? Any people you want to show some love to?
Well, shout out to the whole Blueprint crew, of course, Jason and Vanessa and our board, you know, Mark Daniel, DeMond with Colas Construction, a Black-owned construction firm. They've been supportive of Blueprint since the beginning. And so definitely shout out to them. And like I said, we have so many partners. I'm afraid to leave people out. So I'll just stick with the Blueprint crew.
Okay. One last question. What is your, we are a radio station. So we do play the tunes. If you had to pick a song for your 2021, what song would that be? Dun, dun, dun.
Oh no. You know, I have been listening mostly to jazz instrumental and chill hop.
Yes.
I guess I'll say the Lo-Fi Zelda. If anyone wants to check that out, you can hear it on YouTube. Is what I
was supposed to. That's awesome. I put chill hop on in the background many a times to get some work done. Definitely want to thank you for spending a bit of time, you know, talking about these very important topics, showing some light to the organization. Thank you for doing what you're doing, you and all your team. So I
definitely look forward to having a conversation outside of here also. There'll definitely be some follow-ups. And then, as I said before, we will definitely be talking on the Unrefined Sophisticates podcast also. That'll be a great ride. Yeah. Well, with that, brother, we're going to get ready to get up out of here.
All right.
All right.